on your part.
All right, here we go. Welcome to the On Track and Field podcast. I'm your host, JT Ayers. Track and field, it's the best sport in the world. And if you're listening to this podcast, I'm preaching to the choir. You already know this. So you need to go check out ontrackandfield.com. It is a one-stop shop. It's the best website. It has everything you need, including shoes and pole vault pits and pole vault poles, hurdles. I have the CEO coming down and giving me hurdle carts just as of last week. I am a head coach, and I work with them because they give me the best price and the best product because I want to give my kids the best chance to succeed. Ontrackandfield.com is where you need to go. Just do yourself a favor. Just go there, and you will not be disappointed. With me is Coach Kareem, arguably one of the best sprint coaches in the country. He's had a huge influence on my sprint philosophy, and he doesn't even know that. So we're meeting for the first time, even though I'm sure this friendship will go forever. And so he was at Colorado State. Then he went to South Carolina, where his girls last year were fifth in the country, and the 4x4 broke the school record. And then this year, in 2023, they play second in the SEC and seventh in the NCAAs. And if you're watching the NCAAs, the times that these kids are running is just unreal. So Coach has his team in there fighting, and it's so great to have him on the podcast. Well, here's something that's real fun. He's now heading to Georgia at the end of this month. He'll be at Georgia taking up all the sprint and hurdles for the entire program. And if you know anything about Georgia, they're literally stacked with some of the best talent. And Coach being there is going to be a game changer. So watch out for Georgia winning some national titles in the next few years because of this young man. Well, not so young. You and I are a little more seasoned. He also coaches world champions.
Can I make a comment?
What's that?
I got to make a comment about Georgia because Georgia got – Coach Carol Smith Gerber as the head coach, and she is one of the best in the world. I'm helping her. I'm she's adding me as piece of the puzzle to help her team. So there will be some learning for me to do from Coach, and there will be some cooperation to get the team going. So, but hey, don't get it wrong. Carol is one of the best, in the world. So.
We're aware. I mean, I'm in Southern California, and we've been watching USC for a while. So when she headed over there, I was like, oh, no, she's going to start winning some stuff. And you know what? Absolutely. You're allowed to be humble. I don't have to be humble for you. I'm going to be bragging about you this whole time. I'm a big fan. Okay. But let's start with this. Coach Kareem, when you look at – and I got this from you, from Colorado State, from a mutual friend, Brian Kula, and it's one of the best things that I have, and it has to do with trochander, and it has to do with wicket spacing – and what you do with wickets and percentages and what's something. And I asked this question because it's rare to hear, and you and I were talking right before this podcast, it's rare to hear about a coach that's talking about developing athletes. And this is just one of those things where you're talking about wicket spacing. What do you do to develop athletes, or do you even have to develop athletes where they're at a certain level?
Well, my take is every coach has to develop, at a certain level, at the very, very high level, it's talent management, but that's the development at that point. We talked right before this interview about the performances at the outdoor NCAA finals this year. Crazy, incredible. And rarely there is a high school athlete in the country that is as good as somebody that made the NCAA finals. So the truth is, any college coach getting a transfer, getting a high school athlete coming in, they still have to develop. Athletes on the team, they still need to develop. You're not going to win without getting some development at the NCAA system. So development is a must. Talent management, of course, and just we all want to learn. I mean, at that level, it's very competitive. I mean, it's just so hard not to try to grow in what you're doing and get better, So we all try to develop at that level.
So what are some of those things that you do that are like musts? They're non-negotiables. We're developing athletes. Is that in your warm-up? Are you doing speed drills? Is there something that you come back to often with all your athletes? It's just part of your sprint culture?
You just have to be paying attention to details. Everything has a purpose in the training. Everything has a reason. That's why it's on the sheet. That's why it's part of the training plan. I think posture and mechanics are just a must. For a sprinter hurdler, posture and mechanics are a must. And the warm-up drills, that's part of the development. So on day one, when we're doing ace kips, we're watching their posture. Are they tall? Are they sitting down when they're doing it? Are they broken at the waist? Are they leaning backward? Is shoulder above the hips or behind or head? How they're striking the ground? Are they landing? Are they toesy? They're landing on their toes. Are they really having a good dorsiflexion movement? And there are progressions that we would use. I would use with everybody, to tell you the truth, from the beginning of just how you strike the ground, being tall, all of that. So the warm up is a gigantic deal. I mean, the whole year, but especially in the fall training. Like you wanna sit the standard of what kind of posture we're looking for, what kind of mechanics we're looking for. Then everything else, you know, teaching acceleration, teaching upright sprinting or max velocity or top speed mechanics. And it all starts with mechanics. Then over time, you add more speed and power to that mechanics. But posture and mechanics are the base. Then it goes from there.
It seems like Carol Smith Gabbert and yourself come from a same philosophy. You guys are, I'm not going to try to put you in a bubble or put you like kind of like in this little camp to a short to long approach or whatever. But I know you guys like bounds and I know you guys like power. Is that something that when you were thinking about Georgia, like Georgia's a good fit for me? Because you had a good thing at South Carolina. You were crushing it and you completely changed that entire program from a sprint perspective. So what made Georgia stand out as a good spot for you? And how did you and Coach, Coach Gabbert decide that this is something that you guys, it's a perfect alignment in philosophy that you can go to the next level?
Well, I know when Coach Carol and I were talking, she mentioned something that I feel like it's very important. You know, she wants a like-minded person. And I've learned over the years to be like-minded person because, you know, I was a big physiology guy when I started coaching. It was all about how long, how hard, and what kind of recovery, and you know, the cycle of the week, you know, the waving of the training system, the three high, one low, two high, one low. It was all that. Then over time, I've seen the benefit. When I started focusing on mechanics, I started seeing the real benefit of performance improvement, right? So I coached a guy in 2020. He came to the US in 2020. He was the number one kid in Egypt. He was a 10.3 guy, 20.5 mid. And we ran 10.18 in that year. Then the next year we went at 10.13 and was a new national record for Egypt. And it was strictly because of mechanics, power training. And we did run, we did do speed endurance, we did have fall training, all of that. But really the improvement in his understanding of how to sprint. So when you get somebody talented, but they really don't know how to move correctly, and you teach them how to move, and you teach them the timing of things. So it's posture mechanics and timing. And Coach Vince Anderson, one of my mentors that I've learned a lot from, talked about timing. And for me to be able to explain it, and some people get it, some people struggle to get it, and some people struggle to trust, you know, what the coach is saying. So gaining trust and getting people to buy in, to move in a certain way. One of my former sprinters at Colorado State University, Josh DeLoach, he was the great Janae DeLoach's, you know, the great Olympic medalist long jumper younger brother. And he came in as a walk-on on the team. And he was an 11.08 out of high school. And I remember as a freshman, he ran a 6.90-something in the 60. Well, as a senior, he ran a 6.64. And he ran multiple 10.3s. And it took Josh, his freshman year did not really trust me. But halfway through his sophomore year, and I remember it till now, he ran 100 meters. It was a home meet at Colorado State. And he finally listened and moved the way I wanted him to move. And he popped a 10.5. And he said, "Coach, that was the easiest 100 meters I ever ran." And in that year, I think he ran a 6.8. The next year, as a junior year, he started running 6.7s. And then senior year, he just took off. He completely trusted and wanted more out of this mechanics. And he just absolutely took off and started running. He ran like 5.66s in that year, 5 times, and became really consistent. So it takes an athlete that will really trust a coach. It takes a coach that will work hard in getting the athlete to buy in. And then you teach the good mechanics and the posture, and over time you power it up. You know, you add more power to the technical model, and just explosions happen on the track. So good things happen on the track. So
how important is culture for a sprints program? I mean, I don't, I know this from a high school perspective, as I am very intentional about the culture that we are setting as a coaching staff, as a parent community, as a school community. I mean, everything from jerseys to the way that we warm up, to the music we listen to and how we talk to one another. Now, what does that look like at the college level, and not just the college level, the highest level in the country, especially a place like Georgia?
Yes, it's a must. And Coach Carroll runs a tight ship. She has very high standards for her culture, very high expectations. And I think it's a must to win. Otherwise, it's unsustainable. And you either change yourself, you know, as they say, personality is your personal reality. If you want your personal reality to improve, we might have to adjust our personalities a little bit. You know, that's it. Like, personality cannot be a rigid thing if you want to grow in this life, right? So if you want to grow, you have to be a little bit flexible and make some room for growth in your personality. And I think, and be okay with getting challenged, and not take challenge as something offensive. Take it as a growth stimulus, if it makes sense. So I think a good culture is a must to win. And if somebody doesn't belong, they got a chance to grow. And if they can't, then hey, it does happen. But you just have to have a great culture, a culture of accountability and expectations. And as they say, the challenge has to mean the support. You support the athlete and challenge them at the same level. Too much challenge with no support produces failure. And too much support with no challenge does not allow you to reach your potential. So, you know, the most aggravating thing for a coach is knowing that athlete is really talented. They have so much potential, but they're not reaching their potential. You know, and I think what we're trying to do is to get people to reach their potential. That's the job of a coach.
And the best thing about a track and field coach is we typically don't know that potential. And yes, we're going to find out together with that athlete. Because, like,
absolutely.
You said,
you learn something, you never limit somebody. And I have a story about this. Wagan and Jonathan, who ended up winning the NCAA championship for South Carolina in my first year there. She was a transfer from Division III. She came from UMass Boston. She was the D3 national champion. She won a 52-8. Now, Wagan was really talented. We did not know how talented she is, you know. I remember I started the job in South Carolina in September 2018. And Wadling came there in August 2018. So we met, we worked. I remember mid-October 2018, after a hard Saturday practice, and I love hard Saturday practices for college kids. It makes them think twice before making decisions on Friday night. And it makes them too tired to make any bad decisions on Saturday night. So
that's so good.
Yeah. So I love Saturday practices in the fall, especially in the second half of the fall. But anyway, I remember that Wallen told me, I want to run a 49, I want to run a 48. And what I've learned from this sport, you don't limit somebody. You don't tell her, hey, take your time, it's going to take a while, or it's unrealistic. I just zip my mouth. I'm talking to somebody that just ran a 52.8, and she's telling me that she wants to run a 49, 48. And I said, well, you're gonna have to cough some blood for that to happen. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have to continue to work really hard, and you might end up walking your hands and knees and leaving practice, but it's gonna take everything. But hey, if that's what you wanna do, let's keep working. And I just focused on getting back to work, because really talking about it is not gonna make it happen. It's the process.
Wow.
And later, fast forward, literally, a year or less than a year from that, Wadden ran a 49.60, and she got fourth in the world championship. Okay. It was an incredible year. So she was that talented, but she had to be challenged, and she had to challenge herself. She wanted it. She was driven, and I did not give her a way out. Like, hey, let's take some time. It's going to take a while. I just I zip my mouth. I've learned from my mistakes over the years to change somebody's mindset when they really want to do something scary, scary good. I just said, hey, we're just going to continue to work really, really hard. And it worked out. So it was an amazing year. She really wanted it bad, and she made it happen. So it was so cool.
Well, is that what you look for in a recruit? I mean, you've mentioned a few things in our conversation so far with somebody that doesn't have that good mechanics, but maybe they're running good times and you're like, I can coach that kid. Maybe it's the personality. You're on the phone with them and they're driven and they have vision and they have dreams. I mean, what are you looking for in a recruit as like trying to fit into something that can, because it takes one bad apple to really ruin a whole culture.
Absolutely.
You and I know that.
Absolutely.
So what are you looking for and what kind of advice would you be giving kids that are listening to this or even coaches that are listening to this conversation saying, this is what the best coach in the country, this is what he's looking for. And this is what we need to aspire to be like now in high school.
Right. I think character is a big deal. Mental toughness, work ethics. That's a gigantic deal. So character first, talent, of course, that's non-negotiable and, the desire to get a college degree, sincere desire. Because some people can be, and I've seen it, anybody coach college, seen, you know, student athletes coming in with great test results, all of the high GPA, and some of them don't do very well. Theoretically, they should, and on average, they do, but some of them are not as, they're not really into it. They did it for their parents. They've been, you know, having that structure at home and all of that. But you can meet somebody maybe with average GPA or sometimes below average, but they're truly, truly sincere. They really want to change their life. They really want to get to the next level. They really want to get a college degree. They're passionate about it because at the college system, there is a lot of support for student athletes, especially at the Division I level. There's academic centers, there are academic coordinators, academic coaches. You're going to have that support. So you want to bring a kid that really want to get a degree. So I think that's more important. I mean, the marks are great. Having great GPA, great test scores are great, but also driven toward getting a degree. I think that's important. And we've seen a lot, you know, old coaches, hey, will tell you, I don't give up on young people because I've seen somebody coming in with maybe 2.5 GPA or 2.7 or something like that. They ended up getting their master's degree. So, and same athletically, same on the track. So you learn as a coach not to give up on young people because we've seen, you know, the difference between 17, 18 years old and at the moment of graduation is 22, right? 21, 22 years old, or even somebody does their master's and they stay till they're 23, 24. People can change 180 degrees. So you learn as a coach. Well, I've seen that person. Maybe they were not the most positive, the most mature as a freshman, but over the years, they bought in, they grew, they matured, and now they have a master's degree and they have a good job and they're thanking us for putting up with them, you know, when they're knuckleheads, you know, when they were still younger. But so yeah, those are the three things I look for. It's just character, talent, of course, and the desire, the sincere desire to get a college degree.
Well said. And if you're listening to this, when you go call that college coach, you're not just talking about how fast you've run that one time. You're talking about all these things that coach is saying. I love it. Okay. Now, one thing you're not even aware of this, but there's these like myths surrounding you about how much of like almost a mad scientist you are. And then maybe that's not fair. Maybe you go seek out the mad scientist that has to do with these things. And one thing that I was told through the grapevine in the college community, or rather track and field community, especially the sprint community, has to do with blood flow restriction and these cuffs that you put on. And we're not talking about the 70s when Arnold Schwarzenegger's like, putting a rope around his arm. We're talking about like something that where you know, pump it up and it's to a certain, I'm not sure if PSI is the right.
Certain pressure. Yep.
So you use blood flow restriction cuffs in a particular way. Like, where have you found the best use of these? And I mean, are we talking about recovery? Are we talking about amplifying performance? I mean, how are you using something that, to be quite frank, I've never seen anybody use?
Well, they've been used in the training rooms through athletic trainers and physical therapist as a rehab modality. Okay, so the blood flow restrictors, you know, they restrict the flow of the blood. The body has a defense mechanism of really increasing growth hormone. And you use it twice a week or more, maybe in a rehab scenario, but once to twice a week as a coach on a regular basis, in 6 to 12 weeks, you're going to have some endocrine adaptation. It increases growth hormone. What does a growth hormone increase mean? Better performance, faster recovery, recovery from injuries. So some studies are showing that to recover from an injury using, as part of your rehab, using blood flow restrictors, it makes the recovery happen 20% faster. If an injury needs 10 days to recover from, you can recover in 8 days. 100 days, you recover in 80 days. So it's a good thing. I like to use, and people use them sometimes on their high days. Blood flow restrictor has been used by the U.S. military like years ago. Then the research got declassified, and now it's used in the athletic community. And basically, in case of an injury, if somebody cannot lift very heavy weights or whatever, you can wear the blood flow restrictors and use lighter weight, and you're going to have the effect of heavier weights. So I like to use them on the recovery days because it's just hard for me to use them on my high days. You know, the sprinting, speed, endurance, acceleration, max velocity, just so hard to, you know, to miss with those days. So there are a couple of days a week where we have low days or active recovery days, general fitness days. It's the days when we recover the nervous system, days when we don't do any nervous system related activities, right? So you're going to have days for nervous system related activities, days for non-nervous system related activities where you can touch on general fitness, active recovery. And those days are the days that they use the blood flow restrictors.
So you put them on the kids, on their legs.
Legs and arms.
Oh, yes. Arms too. Yes. Well, you know, this is, by the way, side note, this is how you're going to get big triceps out there if you're listening. You just put those things on and just go to town. Hey, you'll get swole real fast. Okay, yeah. So you're putting them arms and legs, and are you having them do any type of running with them, or are they just doing drills?
Yeah, they usually warm up first, and we'll do low intensity interval training. Usually it's a grass day when we do 100 meter repeats on the grass. And you're doing it as an extensive tempo type, intensive tempo type. It's just an active recovery day, general fitness, and you put on the blood flow restrictors, and you do 100 meter repeats at, you know, 70% effort, you know, something not very high, and like tempo type work and short recovery. We usually do around 1200 meters to sometimes 600 meters. So 6 to 12 reps and with the blood flow restrictors. And usually the next day is a high day. And I've noticed when we use them, when we do maybe 600 meters, that's just a very easy recovery day on Thursday, for an example. When we do only six reps with the blood flow restrictors, you're going on Friday and people are fresher, they're ready to go. And it's just because of that endocrine adaptation, the increase in natural growth hormone production. So it's a safe, good way to do it. And it helps people recover. It helps prevent injuries and all of that. So a lot of research published, yes, about the blood flow restrictors. And we'll see what happened in Georgia when I go talk to coach and say, hey, we need to buy some of those.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for sure because it, you know, I remember last year our girls ran 325 in the 4x4, and we really had a great culture comes from the coaches, but also comes from the leadership of the athletes. And we had some mature athletes, Mackenzie Dunmore, who was a transfer from Oregon, and Stephanie Davis was one of our seniors last year. And both of them were good role models and good leaders on the team. And we had two other athletes that one of them was a true freshman coming out of high school with 54. The other one was, I think she was a junior. She was a sophomore junior last year. And she came out of high school with 55.2. Yeah. But those two split 51.5 and 51.7 in the 4x4. And the other two, it was a 50 point and a 51. One came out of the blocks in a 51. The second leg, McKenzie, was a 50 point. Third leg, fourth leg with 51s. And we ran 325 and broke the school record and all of that. But it was everything. It was the leadership of the athletes, the leadership from Coach Fry and me as his assistant, and blood flow restrictors, everything we did.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I believe that you got to do everything. You have to check all the boxes if you want to have good performance. Everything, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, leadership, culture. If you just take care of everything you can control, if you control the controllables and you try to ace it, you know, you're not going to get 100% in everything, but you try to do that, something good will happen in performance.
Yeah, I think everybody's looking for that one secret, that secret workout that gets everybody faster. But like, it's really refreshing to hear. It's, you know, no, it's everything. It's culture, it's character, it's leadership, it's running hard when you need to and recovering when you need to. It's good to hear you say all these things, because it's really affirming to us coaches that are kind of in the trenches of the high school level, just wondering, okay, are we doing it right? Are we doing the right things the right way? And so we appreciate that. Let's just end with this. Best advice you have for a high school or even college coach as they're kind of like developing athletes and trying to get them to be as good as they could possibly be?
Work on your training plan and your philosophy as a coach, and you work on your competence as a coach. Understand the technical model, understand the mechanics, study it, talk to people, buy books, look, get stuff online, and develop your physiology plan, you know, the actual training plan, and believe in it. Really believe in it. And you have to believe in what you're doing as a coach, and get your athletes to buy in every day into that plan. But if a coach is iffy about what they're doing, that energy, even if you're hiding it, will transfer to the athletes. Hey, if that's the best of your knowledge at that moment, that has to be the best thing that was created on planet Earth at that moment. And you have to believe in it first as a coach, 100%. Then you take it to your athletes with that energy, with that excitement, and just positive energy that this is it and it's going to work. And they're going to believe too. Because if you believe in what you're doing as an athlete, sometimes it doesn't have to be the best thing ever, but it will work. If you have the best program ever and the best coach ever, but you don't believe, it doesn't work. I mean, and that's really the placebo effect. There are books. There's a book called The Placebo Effect. If you and it makes, the placebo effect makes me wonder. There is science behind the placebo effect. If you truly believe, it will work. How about a great coach, great training program, and an athlete that really, that is talented and really believe? It's going to be fireworks, man.
Mm-hmm.
So I think. You work, you do your best to perfect the training plan. And if that's the best training plan you have at this very moment, you have to believe in it and sell it to the athletes. And that, till you learn more and you upgrade the training plan, you believe in it and sell it to the athletes.
Love it. Well, I'm going to let you go. I promised you that we'll try to keep it at 20, and it's so hard. I can talk to you all day. Where can we go online and find more about you, about what you're going to start doing with Georgia? And we are so excited for that. I can't wait to see what starts happening with that. Do you have social media?
I'll be there beginning of July. I have an Instagram. It's Coach Kareem One. You know, I post things sometimes. I have a YouTube channel. It's Kareem Abdul Wahab. It's my name. But really, I have a DVD. I think it's through their Outperform now. So I have two videos. The website, the company is called Outperform. We have Sprinting Smarter, Sprinting Faster. And I did it when I was at Colorado State, and Janae Deloach and Jeremy Dodson were the models, and we talked a lot. It's a 2-hour video about mechanics of sprinting and different methods to develop each phase of the sprinting, start on acceleration, max velocity. And we talked a lot about philosophy, and, you know, and the course come with a little, you know, generic plan. Then when I came to South Carolina, through the same Outperform, we did, Hurdling Faster, Hurdling Smarter, or Hurdling Smarter, Hurdling Faster. And that video that I've done with Coach Kevin Brown. South Carolina has an amazing tradition in hurdles. I mean, Coach Fry coached 3 world champions or 4 world champions in the high hurdles. So I've learned a lot from him, and same as Coach Brown. And we had a great video on hurdler training. Then I also have a DVD through Championship Production. You can buy it on Amazon. It's Curriculum Hurdle for High Hurdle. So there's also articles that are published. You can Google it. I think the one for the high hurdles is Methodical Approach for Developing High Hurdlers. And there is another article on the developing posture and stiffness and its effect on sprinting. And I think the name of the article is called Straighten Up. And if you just put my name, you're going to find these articles. They're available for free. You can check them out. So,
oh, this is great. In fact, the biggest response we get from our podcast fandom for On Track and Field is, I want to know more. And so you just gave me everything. So we'll try to link these all when we drop this podcast.
Awesome.
But Coach, we can't tell you how much we appreciate you and what you're doing. And just
thank you so much, JP.
Absolutely. And we're this podcast is brought to you by On Track and Field and powered by RelayBatons.com, where they can make you some custom made batons that are actually competition ready. Stick around, listen to our he's got a great voice, by the way, with no blood flow restrictions on him. Just picture that. Steve, our CEO, is going to let you know more how to get in contact with us on social media. So, Steve, without further ado, you and your beautiful voice, take us away.
Thanks to our guest, Coach Kareem, for joining us on this week's On Track and Field podcast. The On Track and Field podcast is powered by RelayBatons.com. Custom engraved, meat and competition legal relay batons, water bottles and tumblers. Great for team branding, fundraisers, meet awards and coaches gifts. And by OnTrackAndField.com. Cross country and track's one-stop source for everything you need for a successful season. Competition gear, spikes, training equipment, and shoes. OnTrackAndField.com has everything you need. And make sure to check out our new website, ontrackrunning.com, your new source for competition and training shoes, featuring Saucony, Brooks, On Running, New Balance, Asics, and Hoka shoes and spikes. ontrackrunning.com. And make sure to follow us on our socials at ontrack, the letter N, field, at ontrackandfield on Twitter and the gram.